Remember, whose store burnt down? And you tell all the stories about the store that burnt down, how Jack McKenzie's taking stuff out the back, and tell that story.
Oh, that was, guess it wasn't your dad's store, though, was it?
No,
it was Renison's.
Was it Renison right on the corner?
Renison was right on the
that
corner.
That was Renison.
Oh, yeah.
And what happened? Jack McKenzie, he's taking it out, whatever he can. Soap, mostly soap, all the things. He's stealing soap. He's taking it across and hiding it behind the... You remember the coal car used to go up on a ramp?
Oh, yeah.
Right across towards the river, though. And they'd load coal into the train at night. He was stashing it in behind there. And who the heck was that guy's name? And he was taking it from him.
So he had another guy stealing from Jack McKenzie.
And it was, and some seemed to tell me it was that old guy, we used to call him Creepin' Jesus. But he lived down in the west of town, LeClaire.
Just a minute, LeClaire.
LeClaire. He'd walk up the street this way, and there's a vehicle coming, he'd stop and he'd turn straight. And he was really weird, yeah. Oh, yeah. And he put sand, Say's house, little shack. He lived right next door to Granny Lewis when they lived down on the...
In the West End.
The West End, just before you come to the creek, you turn, and there's a little road went up in there, right? Mm-hmm. And he had sand all around it. And every night, when he done gardening in that, right? Remember? He used to do gardening, odd jobs. Had sand all around there, and he'd come home at night, he'd go all around and see if there's footprints in there. Oh, yeah, spirits. You remember that, don't you?
I remember, yeah.
Yeah. And he was spirit, and then if there was a footprint in it, so us kids caught on. And every day we'd go down and put a footprint in, someone would have to walk right. But we'd take about three or four hours, Buster and Gordy and I, usually. Because you don't know where he's hiding, watching.
Oh, yeah.
For these spirits.
Yeah.
After you've done it two or three times. Then. Oh, gosh. Yeah, I forget. Yeah, his name was, what was it now?
E.E. LeCarey.
LeCarey.
Yep.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
He was a painter, too.
Yeah, yeah. He was a smart man.
He was a very talented man, LeCarey. Yeah. Well, as you say, he was sure an oddball.
Yeah.
Well, you were saying that... you were telling us a story about the about the gravel pit.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, there's another story in here about... in one of these papers... And this is about Jack McKenzie, too. Jack McKenzie had a pig. And one day the pig went down to the riverbank and decided to swim across. So it did. And it swam the river and climbed up. And I guess it rooted around, French guy that used to have a farm? Just
Gauthier.
Anyway, the pig raided Gauthier's garden.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For 3 or 4 days, and then came back down the hill and swam back across the river and went back to McKenzie.
Well, Bissells. How many of the Bissells are in the Bissells around here anymore?
Some of the younger girls are around.
Yeah, but they remember they used to have a sawmill right down.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the Twatma Creek?
Or is that the Twatma Creek? No.
What's the one up here?
The Muskeg.
I don't know which way I am here now. That's right. They're just down, it actually, you had to go down around, it was down around the curve of the river, because they were in a right spot that when the logs came down, I can remember in the spring after the river had run, the logs would come down. I seen that river just choked with logs for 2 and 3 days at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And they were out there with horses pulling them out and keeping the logs to the shore, because they were all going over to that shore, and then...
Yeah, they'd swing in.
But the only thing is, if the creek was running high, it was pushing them away. But they used to get them in there.
Oh, I see.
But I know they used to get quite a few in there.
Well, they had a boat.
I can't remember.
A power boat on the river, and they used to go and pull the logs that way.
Well, I wouldn't know, because we were on the other side of the river. And when the ice was running and all that, we were isolated.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't get across. Well, we never even came. Well, we came to school once they put the cage up. It's in there.
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, but other cage, than that, yeah, we didn't go to school. You see.
Yeah, and sometimes it's going to be 6 weeks. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Well, that's right. And then once the river got clear, lots of times they'd have to dynamite the ice in the bank because there was piled there, and not like nowadays where they could take a bulldozer and in 15 minutes they could have it open, but not in those days. They had to pretty well wait till it thawed out. You see.
Oh yeah. You remember when Art Laporte fell into the water?
I remember.
You remember
something
Art Laporte, don't
yeah,
you?
Oh yeah, he used to be the road foreman.
Yeah. Well, he was supervising clearing this big pile of ice that you're talking about. Yeah. I've been down once and watched, you know, and he was supervising clearing it, and he got too far on the edge and he fell in and took off. Well.
It's not funny.
It is funny.
I'm very rude of you to laugh.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, sorry about that.
The fact of the matter is that Art grabbed a great big iceberg. Cake of ice.
Oh, yeah.
How smart.
And he held on. And eventually they were able to get a boat into the water and go looking for him. And they found him 13 miles down the river, still holding on to
the ice.
That's fantastic, though. I mean, he could have been crushed.
But I can remember old Frank Gorman used to run the ferry, right? Frank Gorman?
Was it Frank? Frank?
Right.
Archie's brother,
Archie's brother. Archie had the family and the farm.
Yeah.
Frank was a bachelor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if the river was high, say, it used to run, I think, I don't know, we used to figure it at 6 miles an hour, that's pretty good speed.
Yeah.
There's no way you could get him to go out after dark to bring that there. If you were on this side or one side or the other, there's no way you'd go at night. Because there's a lot of logs running, eh? There was a lot of stumps and stuff, and he was afraid that, if one caught the ferry, it would break that cable. And I guess it would. You'd pull something loose.
Could, yeah.
Yeah, because it got away one time, not before my time. But it got away and went way down the river. The main line broke, and it just unspooled itself and then down the river went. But I remember a story of, but that was before my time, you see.
Well, that ferry broke away once during the 50s.
Well, you see, that's after my time again.
I was, I happened to be across the river at the time, and I had an uncle with me from Seattle.
Yeah.
Because he was quite amused by this story. There was an airplane landed above the ferry and started the taxi to shore, and it lost the power and it started flowing down the river. And the ferry was going across. And this airplane hit it. And I was sitting on the North Shore. I think the ferry would take four cars, and I was
that's
the fifth.
That's right, yeah.
I was the fifth. I would have been on it the next trip, you see. Well, anyway,
six cars and four. No, you're right. Yeah, six cars and 14 horses.
Something like that.
Yeah,
anyway, I was the next guy. Yeah. And this ferry flipped, or this airplane flipped, and it cut off one of the
cables?
Suspension cables.
Oh yeah.
And the ferry took off.
Oh yeah.
Down the river.
Mm-hmm. Oh gosh.
So we got in.
The way that was threaded, in two blocks and up to a thing, all you had to do was break one, and the whole thing would unspool.
Yeah.
It was an endless.
Yeah,
and not endless. Two ends were up on the top. They came through a block and up, and through like a windlass. That's where remember they used to turn it to tilt, and then back in through a block here and back at the other end went up there, and that the current moved it. You see, that's what it was.
What happened to it?
It didn't go very far. They maybe not more than a mile or so down the river.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
And they got
scared. People.
Can we just tell Frank about Vic? He would know her.
Vic
Emick, or Vic Lamont, that she used to be.
Oh, yeah, you were asking about John Emick. His wife just died.
His wife just died.
I just brought him in. Just died yesterday. You remember Vic?
Well, yeah. He does Plamondon.
Well, I remember the Plamondon family.
Yeah.
But I don't remember her specifically.
See, Frank would like to get John Emig's address and so on, because he's trying to, there's people in Duncan he'd like to contact.
Well, I'll probably go later
well,
on.
Well, Frank's seen him coming out anyway.
There's a lot of that festival.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you. Yeah, Victoria too,
Johnny knows me real well, eh?
Yeah.
And his next door neighbor worked with me. I hadn't seen Johnny for maybe 3 years. One day, this Mike was talking to Johnny, and he said that he mentioned me. He didn't even know who I was.
No, he's
his mind is it's coming and going.
How old is Johnny be now?
Well, he's 72 or 3, but Johnny's worked himself to death.
Yeah,
well, you remember him when he was young here?
Oh, yes.
You remember, don't you?
I don't know what happened. I don't know whatever happened to Johnny's father. I never remember Johnny having a father.
Nobody ever, no. But his mother and him and Rose lived in that little cabin behind, it belonged to the church.
Mm-hmm.
The little log cabin behind the creamery, actually. It was actually back in there. It was faced out on that, but in those, I'm going back a few years, faced out on just an open field where they used to tie horses up and that in there. And it belonged to the church, this little cabin did. Now, Johnny used to have a cow. It was just turned loose in town.
Yes,
you remember
right,
that?
That's right, yeah.
You remember that?
I forgot.
Okay, there was a cow, and you'd see Johnny go out, and he really worked hard, and Rose did too. What she done, I can't remember. But then they moved to the coast, and his mother died about a year or two after they got out there, because my dad and I were pallbearers at her funeral. Now, they lived at Old Hillcrest, which is Satlam now.
Johnny worked like a slave.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That is Satlam.
That's all he ever knew.
But I haven't seen Rose for, she still lives in Duncan.
She lives in Nanaimo,
is it?
Yeah. That's the one I went to see?
Oh, no, wait. You're thinking of Rose and...
Emick married to a Berkey.
Eh?
Rose Emick married to a Berkey?
Yeah.
Yeah, I went to see her.
She married to Glenn Berkey.
Yeah, that's right. And I took Auntie Lily there.
Oh, they
Lily
do live Ash in the night, boy.
Yeah, they live about 3 blocks from us.
Their son works up at... it's not her son. It's a Berkey, but he works up at Kaikou's past our place.
Well, you know where it says Berkey's Corner? Does that mean Berkey's?
That's
that same
named
Berkey's?
After Ken Berkey.
Oh, because then...
That's named
in
after
Duncan,
Ken Berkey.
There's a corner.
It's been that way since he came in.
Yeah.
It's on the map of it. It's on everything. Berkey's Corner. And it's a junction. Well, it's a crossroad. And he had a service station and a garage in there for... I don't know how many years. They had to be in there 25 years, I guess. And, you remember Ken Berkey, one of the old ones, I guess. And it's Berkey's Corner, it's on the map, and nobody gets lost in that country, because if they know where Berkey's Corner is, they know where, and everybody does, you see.
But where is that exactly?
That's just right in Duncan. It's just,
right in Duncan?
That's right just south of, the south edge of Duncan right
now. Really?
Yeah. Really, it's part of Duncan now. At one time it was out of town about 2 miles, but now, like any other city or town, has grown, you see. But Ken Berkey still lives right about a mile away from that, I guess. He sold that business and he's moved. He's just retired anyway. So.
See, the Berkey I know best was Paul.
Paul, well, he went to Saskatchewan and he went back farming. You see, he was out there, and I think Paul may have been, I don't know if he was an older than Ken or not, but I don't know. But he was out on the coast there with the rest of Berkeys. And then he went... he went back farming. He went to Saskatchewan and went farming. Now there was, in Duncan there was Ken Berkey and then Shorty Berkey. And Shorty Berkey was Lowell. His real name was Lowell. Mm-hmm. Remember now?
Mm-hmm. Not very well.
And then there's that Glenn. Glenn is the one that married Rose Emmick.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And now, then there's the youngest girl was Phyllis. She went to school with me. Phyllis and the other one was in Margie's class, which is a couple of grades up. And I can't remember her name. They're not living in Duncan. They're at Ladysmith, which is 15, 20 miles, eh? And that's where the old folks came to, the Ladysmith. See, some of the Berkeys were in Duncan, the older boys were, but the family, it's a sort of a younger ones. And I don't know if it's a second family or not, but they were younger ones. Like there's Phyllis and then there's Bob Berkey. He's around my age. He was in the army with me. Mm-hmm. He was the same age as me. There was Phyllis and Bob, and then Phyllis and Bob, and I can't remember the other girl's name, and I should know her. But like I say, she was a year or two older than me, and higher up in school, like you see. Mm-hmm. She was more Margie's age group. They're all still around there. The ones that are alive. I guess they're all alive. I think they are, yeah.
Well, you see, actually what happened, we probably know, but when Tutty Lumber Company went bankrupt,
yeah,
all these guys were fairly well trained in the lumber business.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there was no work here at all.
No, that's right.
And just about the whole bunch of them moved back to Duncan now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Duncan is, came from Athabasca. You seem to go to Duncan or Ladysmith. It's within 15 minutes either way. I mean, they're in a sort of an area like that, and there's an awful lot. Okay, Bobby Miller. Old Mrs. Miller was there when she died in Duncan. Nora Miller married John Bick. Now, they were in Duncan for years, and I don't know where they're at now. I've lost track of them. She used to work at the Dairy Queen, the last I heard, because I know I'd go there and she'd give me a real good scoop of ice cream. I'd get a little extra, you know. We went to school together.
Yeah.
Like Bobby Miller, I think he died here a couple of years ago, or a year or two. Yeah, he's dead now. And there's some of the Miller girls still here. Edith, I think, is still here.
Edith does an awful lot of work here.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. She's very interested in this. And she's,
then the boys, the two older, one boy of my age, Mickey. I haven't seen him. I came back from overseas on the same boat with him. See, my regiment and the Edmonton regiment was on the same boat coming back, because Gordy Lewis, and there was a lot of guys from Athabasca that, they were little kids, and they knew me, but I didn't know them until I got talking. I knew the names, eh? Mm-hmm. They knew my name, and that's how we got together. But he was on the boat coming back. I think Jack Mackey, he was on the same boat, I think, yeah.
He was in the Edmonton Regiment.
That's right, yeah. And most of the Edmonton Regiment, anybody that was coming back west, which was, it's west too, because Alberta and BC, you see, they were pretty well on the same boat, and then they got... We lost them at Halifax, because they went on one train, we went on another, and that, because all the BC fellows was on one train and that, and then I don't know how they had it organized, but I lost track of those fellows, and I haven't seen a lot of them since then, you see. Another one that I haven't seen, and I often wonder if he's still alive, is Moon Fisher. You remember him?
No, he's dead.
He is dead, is he? Yeah, you see, I don't know.
He was a really first-class mechanic. He worked for Buster Bissell for years.
That's
and
right.
years,
yeah.
And then he bought his own garage in Tofield.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the guys from here used to even take their cars down to have Jim Fisher work on them.
But you remember he used to, he worked, when he was going to school, he used to work, old Al Sharp had the blacksmith shop.
Yeah.
There were some connection there.
Al was either married to,
he was married to
Jim's mother,
I think,
or living
right.
with her. I don't know whether they were actually
there was
married,
Madge Fisher and Moon Fisher. And I think Moon, his name, we call him Moon, I think his name was Jim, wasn't
Jim,
it?
Jim, yeah.
I think that's right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, Madge married at one of the LaBries.
Yeah, you see, I don't know. That was after we left, you see.
And as far as I know, the last time I had anything to do with her, she was living in Kelowna.
Oh, I see, yeah.
I don't know how Jim died. I think he just... I think he died very suddenly. He had a heart attack.
See, I don't know, because... Like, we lost track of all those... A lot of those people once out there, unless you... Well, if you run into Johnny Amick or the Berkeys, or if they had some connection back here, that's the way you'd hear about it. Or they used to send me the echo.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just quit. I don't know, we quit getting it, or it was too many people that... Too many years in between, and I just didn't know anybody anymore. The odd name you'd pick up. Because after, I was overseas, 6 years away, and then a lot of things changed, you see. And then there was two or three years before that that we lived there. So 10 years can go by so quick, and 10 years makes an awful difference. So you lose track of people, and then there were a lot of people. Around the time we left, there was an awful lot of people left this part because there was nothing here. Eh? You remember what it was like? It was that was it. There was nothing. And if there was work, okay, the painters. There's another family that moved out there. The Speed Painter. You remember him?
Well, I don't know my dad's name.
And Lynn, we always called him Speed.
Harvey and
Harvey was married to Mary Mackey.
Yeah, and I've written to her.
Mary still, we still see Mary.
Mary has sent us pictures here.
Yeah.
Through Don Stevenson. You probably know Don by this time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Everybody is interested in, in history now.
Oh, gosh, yeah. There's so much. It's just too bad that my mother had an awful lot of pictures. And after she died, my dad took those in trunks of them, and they were put in a basement. And the basement got flooded, and then Barb and I have tried to salvage them. They're stuck together, but you can't do anything with them. And these pictures go back, because that picture of that team of moose, I know my mother had that on a snap. I know, I'd seen it before. And there's pictures that, a lot of them about Athabasca. But then there are a lot of them that go back for that in Nova Scotia, which is do nothing to do, but I mean in our family, like where they came from Nova Scotia. And I have seen the pictures, Margie's seen the pictures, any of the older ones in the family, but we've lost them all. I just salvaged another one bunch the other day that my brother had, and it was in a great big shopping bag, and I finally found it, and I brought it out of my show all of Barb when I get home.
Well, now, just before you came in, we were talking about this little news item from Thursday, January the 9th, 1910. Mr. and Mrs. R. Vance of Athabascaville, accompanied by Miss Annie Vance, are spending the holidays with Mrs. Vance's mother, Mrs. Legacy of Saint-Emile.
Mm-hmm.
Is Saint-Emile in Manitoba?
No, that's Quebec.
Quebec, all yeah. Right. Does the name Athabascaville mean anything to you?
No.
Well, it actually existed. And if you go straight east, down the hill, from the old Vance place there, go down the hill and go into the bush there.
Oh, you mean on the flats down there?
On that flat. There's a point of land there.
Yeah.
And there were... 9 or 10 houses there, and this was called Athabascaville.
That's right. I do remember something. I'll tell you what I remember. That my grandfather had a house down there. Now, that's as far as I can remember, that's all I've ever picked up. But I had never, as a kid, didn't know where it was or anything, and I chased cows through that there country and maybe walked over it a dozen times.
Yeah. Well, if you look in that place even today, there are dugouts where they probably had a cellar. And there's even there are even some chimney or some roof rafters lying around.
Yeah.
And of course, in those days, there was no planed lumber. 2x4 was about 3 inches.
That's right, too. Yeah.
And I'm going to go over one of these days.
Well, you know, just down the river, you go around the corner down the river about a quarter of a mile, I would say. I'm going, now that I'm in my memory, a quarter of a mile, it may be half. But the year, but in 1933 or 34, an old prospector by the name of Tupper, do you remember him?
Very well.
He lived right down in there, and he had a little, mud shack, more or less, and it had just poles, and it had sod roof, and it was sort of dug in the bank. And this John Sylvain and I used to chum around together, go out trapping weasels, or not, weasels and squirrels. And we used to go down there and visit him, because he fascinated us. He'd have a candle, and he had a little bent,
I know what you mean.
Memory, it was a straw or a glass, and he used to melt this gold. And he was panning gold out of the river, and I don't know how much he was getting.
Well, he was getting enough. He was getting enough to live on. In the winter time, One winter lived in a house that was next to our place, and I was quite friendly with him.
Uh-huh.
He used to have me over for supper once in a while because he was kind of lonesome.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
What you're talking about is a blowfight.
That's right. That's the top. And you blow in it, and it blows through the hole that the candle would be here.
Smaller, yeah.
The flame would be here.
And you add oxygen create to the flame, and you
create more heat. And mind it doesn't take that much heat to melt gold, not as much as it does some metal. But it fascinated us, and he had it in, he had a stick about that long, and it was all little beads. It looked like candle wax on it, you know, how candle would, it would run a little bit and then harden and that. And he had it in little bottles, and he had these sticks of gold in bottles. And he was getting it out of the river, and it was just after the river turned on, and there must have been a back eddy or something. There was a sand, there had to be sand in there, because mostly rock on that river, eh? And that's where he knew where to, and he was in there panning it. And we thought this, it fascinated us, because he was getting gold out of the river, and we couldn't even get any fish out of it, but he was getting gold out of it, you know? Yeah, and he had just a little, and I think he only, I don't think he stayed in the winter, though. I can't remember him being there in the winter.
Why did he still in town? He taught me how to use it.
Is that right?
Yeah. And, you know, they use those for, I don't know if they use them now, but they used to use them for blowing glass.
Yeah, that's right.
Because those things would melt glass.
Yeah, now, that was a glass tube, wasn't it?
It was a metal tube.
It was a metal tube. Yeah, this is what I couldn't remember, you see. But I know, and you don't have to blow, you just barely breathe through it, just enough just to move that flame over.
Well, it's just a matter of keeping a steady
breath
through your nose and blow through your mouth at the same time so that you're, you know.
Where'd the rest of them go?
I don't think they went very far, maybe to the library.
Well, maybe they're waiting for me, I guess.
No, I don't think they are. I don't think so. I think maybe they're looking around at some of the old bricks.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you'd go to the old brick school.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I was in your sister's class, Jean.
Jean.
Well, no, is she still alive?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, she's Mrs. Bolton, eh? Mm-hmm. Married Grant Bolton?
Mm-hmm.
Grant Bolton, I can remember that. Now, the last I remember of hearing about it, now, maybe, I don't know, quite a few years, that lived at Boyle. He was in a bank. Is that Boyle? Am I right?
Yeah, he was a bank. He was the first bank manager in Boyle.
That's right.
And then he moved to Edson.
Oh, yeah.
He was in Edson for a long time.
Uh-huh.
And then he moved to Calgary, and then he retired from Calgary. And they live in California almost.
Oh, is that right?
9 months of the year.
Is that right? Eh?
Uh-huh. We get out and visit them. For a couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah.
Once in a while.
Yeah.
Then they come up here for the summer.
Oh, yeah.
They're up here now, but they'll be going back probably.
They are here, are they?
Yeah. Well, they're not fast.
No.
But they're not where they're.
Yeah.
Relatives.
Now, another teacher, the teachers that I remember when I went to school, Edith Chapin or Chapin?
Edith Chapin.
Chapin, eh?
Mm-hmm.
She taught a lower grade. Then there was, like you said, Jean Faulkner. There was Fred Meadows,
mm-hmm.
Tiny Chaw was his principal,
mm-hmm.
Miss Plumley,
mm-hmm.
and she taught me. And I went,
yes.
And then I went from her class to, I can't remember his name, but nobody liked him and he didn't last very long. I didn't like him and there was a lot of others didn't like him. I can't remember his name. He was sort of he wasn't here very long. He wasn't an established teacher, mm-hmm. maybe 3 years, and that was it. But then there was other teachers, and I can't remember them, you see. Yeah.
Well, the Chapin's family is still very much alive.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In Calgary, and there was one boy, he has a service station in Penticton.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
We always meant to look him up when I ever got around for it. He sent me a picture the other day, but he had class, Tiny Charlie in it. Fred Meadows has been retired for years, and he has been, he's living in Macomb.
Oh yeah. Uh-huh.
And I sure want to look him up one of these days. And
Well, Tiny Shaw died, though, didn't he?
Tiny Shaw died, yeah.
Yeah, I remember my dad telling me that, so he'd been dead for a few years, yeah.
Tiny was one of my best friends years.
Yeah, he was respected. I don't think he... I can remember, okay, now here's a story that I can remember him most. School was finished. The last day of school, we're cleaning up. Mm-hmm. Rudolf Schulte is in my class. Mm-hmm. You remember him? Mm-hmm. He has an empty ink bottle. We don't need that anymore. And I said, yeah, I'll throw it out the window. Not thinking he'd do it. So he throws it out the window. Tiny Shaw is just walking out. He hits Tiny Shaw. He comes in with that grin he has. You remember the grin he had on his face?
Yeah.
Not, we thought, well, no, he's not going to strap that kid today, or that young, well, he was a kid then. He did.
Up
to my office, and the school was finished. We were just in there for half a day cleaning up. But that was your sister's class, and I was in, I know the room and everything. And you went out of this room, and the stairs was right there. And I know if we had to go up that stairs to Tiny Shaw to get the strap, that was terrible. Oh, that was terrible. Because Mike Gullion and I gave your sister a bad time. Oh, well, not really a bad time, but Mike or I, whoever had the young crow, because you know what the young crows are like.
Mm-hmm.
And she put her on, we'd hand it to her butt first, and just as we put it in her hand, we squeeze it. And I wonder if she remembers this. And she would get it right there. And either one of us would, we'd wind up sitting in the waste paper basket. That was a punishment at the head of the class, in the front by her desk, sitting in the waste paper basket, and everybody giggling at us. But this is Mike Gullion and I, I can't remember. Gene Taylor was in my class, and so many years ago, I can't remember who all they were. Laura Miller, that was another.
Oh, yeah, another, so I remember, Laura. I remember her knowledge of mentioning.
She was in that class, like Phyllis Berkey. It's been 40 years. More than that, it's been more than 40 years. It's been, we left here in 35, I guess. I think it's 35. We left here.
Probably about 35,
I think it was 1935 when we left here.
Well, everybody was starving in 35.
That's so right.
Tutty Lumber had closed down.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And I got in touch with the Tutties just the other day. Board I'm on hired a new firm of chartered accountants.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh. And the guy that they assigned to hire to Athabasca was Tutty's grandson.
Oh, yeah.
Les Tutty.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
And he was quite interested. But we've got all those details here, you know.
You remember that Overholtz north of town that had north of Athabasca, I don't know how far out, I can't remember. They had a sawmill out there. Walter Overholt, I think that was the name.
Walter and Harry.
That's right. That's right. Walter and Harry Overholt. They had a sawmill out there.
Yeah.
Because I remember my dad was going to build a barn. I can't remember what year it was, because the first year we came from the States, we cleared 5 acres of land, my dad and I, with a team of horses. I was just telling Al about this last night. You couldn't get kids 13 years old to do that nowadays.
Mm-mm.
And then the next year we built a barn, and he worked all winter hauling these logs in, and he didn't have enough in the spring because he was going to build a barn in the chicken house. So he got George Rogers, cut some logs, and they floated them down the river, and I had to tow them one at a time up the hill over there to where we were going to build the barn. And he traded a cow to Harry or Walter Overall, whoever had the sawmill anyway, for enough lumber to sheet the loft floor. And that was what we done the first year. Next year we were going to put a hip roof on it. But then next year never came. You know, it's one of those things.
Typical Bob Vance.
Yeah, it never came. And we thought, at least I thought, well, I'm going to have a dry barn. There's not going to be 2 feet of mud all summer because the cattle and the horses get in there out of the flies, eh?
Yeah.
But no, we had 2 feet, only we had 2 feet, 40 feet square instead of 20 by 30 of mud. And then we couldn't wait for freeze. Everything had to stay outside till freeze up. Because you should get in so the cattle and that wouldn't go out of sight. No wood, no slab floors, and there's slabs all over the country. You know, every sawmill thrown away, nobody's burning slab. And I thought to myself, why couldn't throw a few poles down and throw some slabs on? But they said, oh no, wait till it freezes and it'll be all right. Well, it is all right, but in the summertime, it's pretty grim. I can still remember that. Oh, good.
Just amazing the things people used to do to get by in those days.
Yeah.
Eh?
Yeah.
I was talking to an old guy the other day. He was an immigrant, and he started a farm. He came in here just in the middle of the Depression, and he finally couldn't feed his family any longer. So he went to the RCMP, and he asked for relief. That is what they called it, you know, really.
Yeah, that's right.
And they gave him $5.
Yeah.
And the policeman said, if you ever come back again, I'm going to deport you.
Mm-hmm.
And he got through the winter by shooting squirrels.
Oh. Yes.
Finally shot enough squirrels to buy a sack of flour. Mm-hmm. Well, it was...
You know, I can remember of those remittance people coming out here, and I can't remember the name. Maybe it's just as well I can. They were a young couple with a baby, and they came out here in the fall of the year, went north of town, and the government or somebody was in on it that got them a quarter section of land. And it's usually out on the sand hills up there. You couldn't grow anything anyway. They, I don't think, knew how to cut a tree down to make a log cabin or a house. So they dug a hole in the bank, and they sort of made a cave. And this and the child, the baby, I can remember of it having pneumonia and everything. They finally had to come to town, but they were going to start a herd of cattle. So they. I don't know where they got the calves from. I guess in those days, farmers would give you anything pretty well. I guess they would now, but I mean, they had a lot of cattle. Everybody, Todd Richards had cattle he always had cattle, extra then. And they were feeding the calves. I think because they're small, they'd get a roll of hay and a handful of hay and they were feeding them. Well, they were too young to even eat. They should have had milk. So I believe they lost all of them. But I can remember this first winter. They didn't make it till Christmas, and they had to get them. Somebody had to get them out of there. They're starving to death, you see. There was a lot of people brought out that way, and they shouldn't have been, because this was pretty cold country in those days. I don't understand that. I don't think it's been as cold as it used to be. We used to get 60 below. And I don't know. I hear, anyway, that it hasn't been that, you know, for a few years now.
Well, it's last year. So.
I think really what happened, I think really what happened was that there was so much land cleared, you know, when the cold settled in that river valley, it just stayed there. There was nothing.
Yeah,
yeah. You never had a wind here. Now you've got a wind that keeps moving the weather. Keeps moving away. Well, you see, about that time, there's so many people on relief in the cities, and the cities and the government figured it was a good deal if they would give them a one-time shot. I think they gave them $700. To go out and start a farm.
That's right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, all these greenhorns came out that didn't know a thing on the $700.
Yeah.
And of course, $700 lasted about 6 months.
Mm-hmm. And then they became in charge of the welfare of the municipalities.
Yeah.
Got them out of the cities.
We got them out of the cities, yeah.
Now, what year was that? 34 or 35? There was a drought around Tabor, Alberta, because a lot of people came here from Tabor. And they went north. A lot of them came in here by the train loads with machinery that you wouldn't believe. It was way too big for this part of the country. Mm-hmm. It was all right for south of Edmonton, Calgary area, where there's that bush like there is. They put it in our. They asked my dad if they could leave it, and it was all in parts and pieces, and rolls and rolls of barbed wire. And there was three families that I can remember, and I can't remember their names, of course. They said, can we leave it in your corral? And it was safe, it was in the corral. Well, we couldn't use the corral. My dad said, sure, go ahead. And I think it was 2 years, and it was still, some of it was there when we left. And they would come in, they'd get what they needed, and they'd take it out, and they'd put it together. And they were getting quarter sections back here in the bush. But they made pretty good. They were weary workers. But what they were doing, the government was paying to move them in, but it wasn't all their machinery. If it was left there, they were loading it on and bringing it out anyway, because it was too large for this country. I mean, I can remember gang plows. They didn't have anything in this country, enough horses to pull it, I don't think. Not up in here, you know, that larger than we ever had.
Well, it was the late 40s and the early 50s that the farms up here got mechanized.
Oh, yeah.
Because
that's
in
right,
the 30s,
yeah.
There was no money. They couldn't afford to buy tractors. And in the 40s,
yeah, that's right.
They weren't making tractors because the war was on. In the late 40s and the early 50s, the country, you know, went to a big machine. Yeah. That was really the start of farming in this area.
Oh, that's great, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
You should drive around and see the farms now. They're beautiful.
Yeah, we're going to, we're showing some of these farmhouses, and some of them are fantastic, aren't they?
Yeah, this area, somebody claims this area between Athabasca and West Block is one of the most beautiful drives.
Is that right?
Where's this then?
This highway south, you know, with the big broad ditches.
The view from where Ronnie Moose is building his house, all over the valley, it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
That Collington, back down on the way to Collington.
Well, are you done, Tom?
Yeah, I think we better. We haven't got that many days, so we gotta try to fill it as soon as we can.
We're gonna go across the river where the horse was.
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
You can find out the basketball if you look.
Do you? You just go across on the bridge, and there's a left turn there.
You take the first left turn and just follow it.
Well, that left turn, would that be just past old Goetzie's farm and then come back down the road?
No.
You don't go back in that part. You come in on the flats?
No, don't worry. I know where to go.
Yeah.
Just on the flats.
Right across from the golf course.
Oh,
yeah, where you pick the blueberries.
You're just over the bridge.
Big golf tournament on.
Yeah.
Oh, is there?
Yeah.
Well, it's really, you know, it's been nice.